Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah. Okay, it's time for another toy department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. What's going on out there in San Francisco today?
Not much, honestly. The day's just getting started.
I guess that's true. But you've done a whole show and everything already.
Yep, did a radio show. Talked about the Warriors and Niners, as I so often do these days.
Does anyone want to talk the Niners? That seems like a really depressing situation.
My new thing is more or less defending the Niners. It's a fun pastime. Makes people very upset.
I can see that.
I mean, the thing is, you know, whatever. It's a lost year.
It's a lost year. That's not the team right now is not the team it's going to be. It's not the team it's supposed to be. So what are you going to do? All right. We are going to – we may get to some sports at some point in this show, but we've got a lot of entertainment to get to. Some music. Got a couple records to talk about today. We got some hot Netflix action. But I thought maybe we would start in the world of the movies. We went to a couple. I'll tell you, I had forgotten to see Creed 2.
Oh, jeez.
As of last night, and I looked at my homework, and I was like, oh, supposed to go to the movies. So I accidentally wandered into my local theater last night to watch Creed 2. Mm-hmm. And discovered this amazing thing called Discount Tuesdays.
Yeah, we got those too.
Yeah,
it's a thing apparently.
My ticket was $5. I got a bottomless medium popcorn and drink for $6. So all in,
very solid
at my local $11. Theater. First run movie, $11, and you know you don't get the. It's one of those where you're not getting the deluxe recliner.
Sure,
but it was delightful. Discount Tuesdays maybe more of a thing for me.
Yeah, totally.
It works
for the podcast schedule too.
Certainly does. I guess the question is, was the discount the best part of the evening for me? And I would say no.
Okay, that's good.
Creed 2 was enjoyable but flawed in my view. What say you?
Agreed. I think that's the perfect way of describing it, which. The concern, if I had one, would be that is also how I would describe most. That's pretty much the best way I would describe my favorites of the Rocky sequels, where Rocky is truly a classic. It's a great. It's really a great film. It is. I've watched it again recently, and I don't know if Creed is quite Rocky, but it was really good, and. Had some really winning performances and really sold it and didn't feel too forced or cheesy. And I'm not sure I can say those things about Creed 2.
I was just about to say, you better not say didn't feel too forced or cheesy.
Because it did. It felt forced and cheesy. There were some weird choices. But did I enjoy myself for the most part? Yeah, I think I did.
Yeah, it's a good time. But I think it's always been set up to be a good time. The first thing in my notes is Tessa Thompson deserves a better movie.
Always.
She is radiant and completely charismatic. And
has a real, you really understand her character.
Yeah.
Whereas even Michael B. Jordan, who is not a bad actor, is, he's a pretty one-dimensional person in these, especially even as you draw it back to Creed, where his sort of defiant anger made more sense, but there was sort of no character development past that, which all sort of happened in the first one, I think.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I also thought, like, Stallone was just so good, I thought, in Creed, and so interesting, and did such a good job of almost building on the character that was painted so well in Rocky One. You know, it was almost the true emotional equivalent for that character of a sequel to the original. And this, again, just was pretty one-note Rocky and not much to it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Stallone has said he's retiring this character, and I it's time. You know, you watch that movie.
He's about done with it.
And you feel like, yeah, it's time. The Rocky arc is complete. And this is a mean thing to say, but I feel it's true. His face has now sort of betrayed him as an actor. You know what I mean? And the lack of movement available to him in that face.
Yeah.
And
that part's not great.
Yeah. Like,
but again, I did think, because I watched Creed again pretty recently, getting ready for this, and I think it's one of his best performances, Stallone. I mean, I think he's really convincing, and he's kind of charming in the same way Rocky was in the original, and you kind of feel his weird pain as being kind of alone in the world, and the bond like it made sense and it felt real, and I don't know, that just was sort of all gone.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that they really tried to do that for Drago in this movie.
Correct. That's what it was. It was almost, this was Dolph Lundgren's chance to get the, and you know, it's interesting because what it sort of feels like is after all those years, Stallone was excited to have like a fresh look at the Rocky character.
Yeah.
And then when it came to do it again, it was like, okay, now we're just doing it again.
So do you feel like Dolph Lundgren really seized the moment there with his opportunity?
Yeah. I don't know that his opportunity was as good. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I would also because agree that I don't think he really, you know, I didn't come out of this movie going, oh, Dolph Lundgren, I never knew, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, he's also had a long career with very few exceptional performances. but I also don't, you know, to be fair to him, I think the fundamental biggest difference is Creed 1 was a better written movie, and so all the people seemed better.
Yeah, I think it's true. Better written and probably better directed. You know what I mean? I think some of that's just me going, well, it's Coogler. You know, how can this guy be Coogler?
Right, and there wasn't anything wrong with the direction.
No, me neither. That's exactly the way I felt, but I also came out of it going, well, that just wasn't as good, and I imagine that has to be some of not having Ryan Coogler to run it. You know what I mean?
Sure. Having him oversee instead of actually participate day-to-day is probably a downgrade, no matter who it was.
Yeah, I just, and I couldn't put my finger on why, so I felt that was sort of unfair to the guy who did direct it, because it does look good a lot, I think, you know what I mean? Like, it's a visually
The fights were well done.
Well, all right, so this is a complaint.
I mean, they're very choreographed, but boxing always is in movies.
Yeah, I just, this is a general complaint that I have. I feel like this is a movie in particular that really sort of gets at times almost fixated on some of the details of, you know, a boxer's life, you know, longing shots of Michael B. Jordan in the ice tub bath and, you know, the endless training montage. And then I have no problem with that. I think that part of it can be interesting in trying to really see what it's like, you know, in the moments when the spotlight goes away and you're left with all the bruises and whatever, that's fine. But I feel like it's a movie that gets details right, except for the sports part of it. You know, like the fights are insane. Like,
I just don't know.
And how, even the Sports Center stuff, you know what I mean? Or all the ESPN stuff, which looks really real. Like they clearly paid to get the real Sports Center graphics and stuff. And sets and things like that. And yet then they have all the Sports Center anchors say these like really scripted things that just feel off. Like, why doesn't a movie just let Scott Van Pelt just go, okay, here's the situation, here's the guy. Just give us a take. Give us like what your take would be. You know, rather than putting weird dialogue in his mouth that you know that Scott Van Pelt wouldn't say. I mean, the audience for this movie is going to be 70% sports fans, right? Like, why?
He was also a 25-1 underdog.
Yeah. Like,
which is like, I don't know if any boxer, certainly not in a major title fight, has ever been a 25-1 underdog.
Like, when was the last fight that you saw that had like five knockdowns in it?
Yeah, almost never.
You know, and every fight in this movie, I mean, somebody got saved by the bell, which happens, like, you've seen it before, but you're probably counting the number of times in your life where someone's like, oh, that guy was going to be knocked out, but the bell rang.
Well, I mean, I'll give them this. Most of the fights you watch are pretty boring, so they can't very well have them feeling each other out for four rounds.
Right, but you're not going to show an hour long, right, an hour, you're going to show 6 minutes of an hour long fight, right?
Right.
So why so not presuming, have like a realistic fight that you just cut together the 6 minutes of the most exciting parts? You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think part of the problem is that is what they do, and then it just feels like, so now it's all exciting parts
but
and crazy stuff is happening.
But
it's
more than that, right? Because like no one like
it
is true of all the entire Rocky series. Like no one really plays any defense, right? Like it's
correct.
It's all people slugging each other as hard as they can and lots of ducking. You know, there's a little yes. bit of absorbing of body shots, but that's only to set up the pretext of like some killer rib punch. You know what
right.
I mean?
You're breaking the ribs.
Yeah, like everything is super breaking. Real in these movies except the sports part, and it's always really annoyed me as a you know person who watches sports. You know,
well, I agree. I'm annoyed by those things as well, but it's also I think that's why when a sports movie does those things well, it's so celebrated so easily.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you know, we just had a fight. That Fury fight was kind
yeah.
of like a Rocky fight. Like, that's a real version of a Rocky fight. Like, why not have that? You know what I mean? Or, like, that wouldn't be that hard, where the guy gets knocked down and you don't really think he's going to get up, but somehow he manages, and then it goes to a weird decision. Like, that's a, you know, like, that's a thing that could happen. Like, I just don't understand why
right.
every one of these fights has to be so freaking incredible, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do think, whatever. I don't need to defend this, because you're right. I do think there is sort of a hidden presumption that, you know, those are the six fights we didn't see.
Yeah. It seems like it wouldn't be hard to, when you have actual people from actual sports shows, to get them to say things that sound realistic.
That part I agree with. That's hard to understand. And I don't know if it's just that these sports talkers sort of freeze up when you tell them they're in a blockbuster film or what?
I would guess that it's the screenwriters who are like, don't mess with my dialogue. You know what I mean? Like, I wrote this thing trying to sound like you and I
guess,
to
but they're not on set. I mean, that's gotta be a director decision.
Yeah.
A director could easily throw the script out and say, all right, here's the situation. I think part of it is that often the people in power in an artistic medium like film aren't generally huge sports folks.
I guess, yeah. I just wish someone would come along like Bradley Cooper style and be like, we want to do this super verite. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Just,
I'd feel
well,
better about it.
I think Oliver Stone did that with Any Given Sunday, right?
He tried, I think. And I think people appreciate the sports scenes in those movies, right?
That movie, yeah, sure.
Yeah, sorry, that movie, I should say. Yeah. I mean, that's the reason why people still watch Any Given Sunday, right? It's not for the Pacino performance.
Oh, I think it is also for the Pacino performance.
Or Dennis Quaid.
Maybe not for Quaid. Cameron Diaz, yes.
Dennis Quaid's another one where it's like, all right, dude, don't, you know, the surgery, man. Like, it's at some point it's holding you back.
And yeah,
or the
Tom
Botox,
still thriving.
I should say. Yeah. All right, yeah, he's got good doctors.
I guess so.
Can I throw out a couple more quick hits on this before we move on to the front runner?
Yes, please.
Shout out to Felicia Rashad, who
yep.
has still got America's Mom's chops. You know what I mean? Like, she is delightful in this movie. And I feel like I haven't seen her since the last one. You know what I mean?
Yep. I don't know why she's not working more. She's great.
Just a regal presence. This is maybe a larger point. Like, I understand why, from a marketing standpoint, you know, you want to make all these movies out of existing intellectual property. I get it. And I understand why you want to have these well-known or in some cases iconic characters in stories. I'm not just talking about this movie. You can say this about the Star Wars movies as well. I'm a little bit over the just completely reconstructing the original plots of these movies in the sequels, where we kind of have these movies that are almost half sequel, half remake.
Yeah, that might be the worst part about this for all the things we've already said.
Yeah.
Is that it really just feels like recycled pieces of a couple of the Rocky sequels. And there's no reason for that. No one's that attached to the plot lines of those movies.
Yeah, people like the characters. Just tell new stories with the characters. And this goes and again, for you too, Star Wars, you know?
And again, that's what they did so well in Creed 1, which makes it all the more confounding.
Yeah. Yeah, that really bugged me. Last thing, I enjoyed the Mike Will stuff when they let Mike Will do
Mike
songs.
Mike Will made it.
Yeah, Mike Will's kind of a badass.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
All right, you want to talk about the front runner?
I do.
You saw this more recently than I, and I'm sort of curious about what you thought about it.
Saw it on Monday night. Thought it was a really good movie that is super relevant and, you know, really one to grow on in 2018, as it were.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a relevant movie. Certainly.
That being said, I'm not sure I loved it or had a great time.
I'm not sure it's a good movie.
Really? You know? I think it's really well done. Why isn't it good?
I
thought it was well acted. I thought it was well written.
Did you? I
mean, I don't know Gary Hart. I don't remember Gary Hart. I don't recognize him.
Gotcha. I mean, I remember a little bit. I just felt like the Hugh Jackman performance was, you know, and I think he's trying to do Hart. Hart was maybe a little wooden. I just don't think I never really got the sense of why this guy was supposed to be so charismatic and inspiring.
Oh, well, I think that's just a matter of relativity.
Which, I mean, you know, at least from historical context, he was, you know.
Isn't that context?
Maybe.
You're comparing him to, you know, Walter Mondale.
I guess. So the movie needed more scenes of him and Mondale getting into it.
No. I mean, I don't know that I don't know that the movie cares to prove that he was charismatic relative to his dullard peers.
I don't know, but I mean, I feel like that's part of the pretext of the story was that you know, there's a need to get this
guy.
That's what makes him the titular character. No, is this, you know, that he's winning. He's a winning guy.
I kind of thought what actually made him interesting was that people at that time still did kind of care about politics, and he actually had interesting things to say.
Yeah, he did have interesting things to say. I certainly agree with that. And I do think that I guess my other issue with the movie, I feel like, is that it really examined this. I felt like through a hindsight lens, like I felt like the characters had almost a preternatural understanding of the moment that they were in and the consequences of said moment.
Did they?
I felt unreal.
Like at least the. I don't know. I felt like the Hart character was just a guy who really fundamentally just didn't get it. Who didn't understand the moment he was in and didn't want to participate in the future. As much as his politics were about the future, he didn't want to participate in the political future as it was going to be.
I think that everyone's there understood that, well, if this, you know, if we give into this, it changes everything going forward. And I just don't think that's an emotion people have very often.
Maybe, but I think it turned out to be correct. It didn't matter whether they gave in or not. It was going to be the new paradigm.
Yeah. I mean, how often do you, like, that's this what I mean, though, is how often does somebody say to you, I've been confronted with the new paradigm? We're dealing with a new paradigm.
No, I understand, but I'm still saying that to me, even if that's true, that's just the point of the film.
It is the point of the film. That's what I mean. I think it's the film, look at it. By making all the characters aware of it, it's making that point in a very heavy-handed way.
All right. I mean, I guess I see that point. That the characters seem generally aware didn't burden my viewing too much. Although certainly J.K. Simmons, of all people, seems to be aware very intimately of what's happening and tries to explain it. And maybe that is heavy-handed. But I also think it's – and maybe that's why I didn't love it. It's a heavy-handed – it's a movie making a heavy-handed point.
Yeah.
I think it's a point well taken and a point I think should be made more and perhaps needs to be made in a heavy-handed way, which is that, you know, this is one of the many deaths of the dream of the American political system. You know, there are lots of things that have gone wrong over the years that separate reality from the purity of the dream of the American political system.
Yeah.
But, and maybe it may be that even bigger than this is campaign finance stuff and gerrymandering, but this is up there.
Yeah. It's part of the death of seriousness in the culture at large, right? You know what I mean? And
it's not important for the culture at large to be serious. It is important for the political process to be taken seriously.
Yeah. Yes, but I also think because the personal is interesting, we then now culturally sort of inject the personal into all things. And I'm guilty of that as much as anybody.
Me too, but I still think there's a difference between people who can draw the line between the personal and the professional and political, and it's an important line. And one of the greatest problems with our country at this moment in time is the shrinking percentage of people who understand where that line is and or should be.
I mean now we're going way over it, and we're doxing people and showing up on people's lawns and stuff and worse.
It's insane.
I don't know. I feel like I sort of mentioned this on last week's show. I feel bad because I had seen all the movies my family wanted to see for this podcast. And so I dragged them to the Front Runner. And I think they had a much worse time than if we'd gone to see Widows or Good Book or Green Book. So.
Certainly than Green Book. No question about that. Yeah. Probably than Widows as well. Yes. It was a bummer in a lot of ways because you spend the whole time thinking about how it's been all downhill from there.
Yeah. I do think the movie does take pains, I think, to show you, the effect that this movie had both on Donna Rice and on Lee Hart. Very surprised, by the way, and I appreciated this from the movie because I was definitely about to Wikipedia it on my way out, that they sort of gave us the update on their marriage and that they're still married.
I thought it was interesting that was the one thing they chose to share about the post-movie history.
It was the one thing I wanted to know. So.
Okay, fair enough.
So good on them. You know, I guess.
So has he been out of politics since that time?
He has, yeah. Yeah, it was pretty much the end of it for him. It's weird, right? It's weird what derails some people. You know?
Well, it seems insane now, given who's president, does it not?
It's like, and this is a real, this is a real life point. Like, sometimes I think about Howard Dean, right?
Yeah, he cacawed.
Right, yeah, and it's over for him. He's not going to hold another public office again, right? He was ahead at that point. And somebody probably will make a movie about that someday. And, a goofy scream, it all ends. You know what I mean? And then now we see some of the stuff that people are willing to put up with and justify. And it's,
well,
how did we get
the
there?
Problem.
That's 10 years we got there in that space. You know what I mean?
I don't think it's that different. He's being sold to different people who want intelligence and responsibility and even keeledness out of their leaders. That's why Obama is so appealing to the left and Howard Dean, because the left then and still now sees certain things as disqualifying. The problem is the right doesn't, and
I just,
hasn't for a very long time.
I suppose I would just say he's... And now we're way out of the toy department, but is Howard Dean going, we're going to go to Washington and Oregon and Vermont and woo.
Ha ha.
How different is that from Nancy Pelosi on this election night going, let's hear it for pre-existing conditions? You know, like, yeah, it was a little off. He was a little awkward, but like, it's not disqualifying, you know?
I don't think that would have disqualified Nancy Pelosi 10 years ago either.
It might have.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, let's move on to the world of entertainment, shall we?
Yes.
Speaking of Screams, Narcos.
Yes. References to other podcasts.
Yeah, and well, I feel like, you know, shout out to The Watch, because I can't even read the word Narcos without hearing Chris Ryan go Narcos.
So, yeah, there's a few things like that in my brain, unfortunately, but yeah. I really liked this.
Yeah, me too. I don't know, where were you at with the original Narcos?
Never saw a minute of it. Everyone told me I should, but I never got around to it. Not angrily or deliberately. I just never got around to it.
Love season one, and then kind of got over it pretty quickly in season two and bailed. I think, what, did they make 3 or 4 seasons of the original Narcos? I don't know.
Literally no idea.
But I bailed. this, however, is pretty transfixing. No?
Is it operating at a deeper level than the original Narcos? Because that's the sense I get, but I don't know.
Yeah, it is, but not in like, not radically deeper.
Yeah, it's not deep.
It's just smarter.
But it is, it's smart. Yeah, that's right. And it's painting a picture on a broad level and with depth in terms of the plot. So it's not necessarily sending any great message. It's more or less telling a history of a violent drug trade, but it's painting the picture of how it went down in an interesting way. That's not just check out all these murders.
Yeah, and I only watched 2 of these, so obviously
me too. But the getting, and I don't think this is too much of a spoiler, but El Chapo showing up weirdly in episode 2 was like, I have a feeling we're going to be seeing people we know as time goes on.
Yeah, I would think you're going to get more of that. I also get the sense, and this is, it's just a sense, obviously, because I've only seen 2 episodes, that you feel like you're getting a sprawling Wire type of story.
Yes.
You know, that's going to be about the entire system. I'm here for that. Michael Pena and Diego Luna are
both
arresting. no pun intended. In the lead roles in this, like they're great actors, but they are commanding on the screen. I am so here for whatever's going to happen with either of those narratives.
Well, and also I think to that point specifically. These are both guys that are pretty beloved primarily in smaller roles. I mean, I guess Diego Luna has had bigger roles in Spanish language films, but I love Michael Pena, but I feel like he doesn't get a ton of screen time in any of his films for the most part. And
yeah,
so,
although that's starting to change, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah. But seeing the two of them really lead this and both in – certainly Michael Pena in a way I don't think we've seen a lot of him. It's great. They're both great.
You saw the I think it's The Watch, right? The movie he did with Gyllenhaal.
No,
you should watch that if you're looking for like
really
Michael Pena screen time.
It didn't look
End
great.
End of Watch. That's the name of it, sorry.
End of Watch, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good, man. It's pretty good, End of Watch.
Okay.
And there's, you know, he's definitely done a few more since that. Did you notice who the narrator was?
Scoot McNairy, I believe. I didn't check. But.
So I gotta, you know, I'm assuming since he's narrating this, at some point he's got to show up in this story, right?
Perhaps, yeah. I was wondering. Speaking of Diego Luna, I don't know if you saw.
Because the narration's kind of first person, is right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it seems like a guy who's involved in the story in some way.
It does. It seems like he's going to get involved.
Yep.
Did you, for either of the films we saw, happen to see a preview for If Beale Street Could Talk, the new Barry Jenkins?
I did not, actually.
Yeah, that looks interesting.
I'm trying to remember. I feel like it was like pretty much the same previews for all of the movies that I saw.
Yeah, that can happen. that can definitely
by
happen.
The way, Can we just, I'm already fired up to see Vice. Can we just, it's not coming out for like 3 more weeks. Can we stop with all the constant commercials and previews? I'm in. You got me. Like,
isn't that, that's a problem I often have with the movie world is like, especially because, I mean, I think probably not unlike me, we watch a limited range of commercials on television, and a lot of it's sports or in some way, you know, this again, it's just the same shows with the same basic commercials. So you end up seeing previews and multiple cuts of trailers for movies you're already definitely going to see, and it's just like you're just spoiling scenes for no reason for me. Just stop it.
Yeah. Like, and I get it. I understand. They got to flood the zone, but it's like, man, I really would just. I'm enough. I got enough. I'm gonna watch Vice. I promise.
Right. yeah, we are gonna watch Vice though. It does look incredible.
Yeah, that's 100% going to be in this podcast.
I cannot wait to watch Sam Rockwell do a ridiculous George Bush impression.
Yeah, no, that's going to be excellent. You know, obviously, look, Bale's going to get a ton of credit, I think, for that performance. And,
yeah, of course, but I'm just saying, like, and he's putting on the makeup, and I'm sure he put on some real weight, and Steve Carell is doing a Rumsfeld thing, but specifically... It just seems like they did so little with Sam Rockwell. It just gives me such confidence he's going to do just a delightfully over-the-top W.
Yeah,
and I am very excited for
that. That one scene was like, you want to be my lass?
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Like, I want you. I want you. You want to be my vice? What do you say, dude?
I'm here for that. Because I feel like that's almost exactly how that went down. That's sort of what I'm
saying. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And the same, and with Bale, too, then very seriously being like, well, listen, that is a largely ceremonial role. But if you want to, like, let me do all the stuff, I think we could probably figure that out.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, sounds great. It's like, yes, that's exactly how I picture this conversation. And not, and like, the one thing is W might call him Uncle Dick is the one thing in real life.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I would believe that. That is where I'm at with this story.
It's a really great combination of people to make this movie. You know, I think Adam McKay, right? Is the right director for it. You know what
Certainly.
I mean? And
I mean, based on everything we know, he seems perfect.
They got the right people. It's gonna be great. You know, one point that you made last week when we were talking about watching Narcos that I really felt the subtitles thing does change your ability to watch the show. You know what I mean? And certainly, like,
see?
You really got it. You got to block out some time, and you can't watch it late at night.
You can't watch it late at night. You also can't, like, watch it if you're cooking or, for instance, dealing with your dog in any way.
No.
Because if you look away from the screen for a second, you can miss something.
Yeah. It's tough. You really got to be there for every word in the show. Sometimes I'm like, oh, great, they're speaking English. I can look away for a second.
Yeah, it's harder work. It is. It's just harder work. And it's not like I actually do that much when I'm watching most things. Like, I'm... But it's just, it feels harder.
Yeah.
Significantly.
Oh, I'm a full on millennial when I watch television. I'm
doing
4 other things often. But not for this show. So block out some time. Because so far it seems like it's worth it, I would say.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I really don't say that easily, I think, is well established.
Yeah. Two records to cover this week. Do you have more Narcos thoughts?
Nah, we good.
Okay. Two records to cover this week. I feel like I have a pretty good idea where you're at Anderson .Paak, so I would definitely like to know what you thought of the 1975's record.
And I'm going to tell you right after I take a quick bathroom break. Hold on. Right in on the 1975.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I left the bathroom break in because I thought it was funny. So
that's fine.
We're back. I mean, there was some pause, but here we are.
Yeah, yeah.
We're back. You went to the bathroom.
We'll, we can cut down a lot of that pause, hopefully.
It gave me time to look up the 1975's album, which I couldn't remember the name of, but I don't feel bad because it's A Brief Inquiry into Online Relationships is the full name of the record.
Right.
Which sounds pretentious as fuck, but is accurate. You know what I mean? Like
that's what it is.
It really is that. So that to me makes it sort of less pretentious.
I don't totally remember how you reacted to the last 1975 album, but I feel like it was lukewarm. Is that right?
I think I might have been lukewarm at the time. They grew on me a lot, I would say, in the intervening year or so since.
Okay, because I have to say, I don't know exactly what it is, but I think I just really like this band. Like, I just find this, and I feel like I felt this way about last year's album. I just find it to be a really charming, enjoyable set of tunes.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. And I sort of had the same reaction of, I just think this is a good band. I think it's definitely, I would say almost unquestionably, like an interesting band. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They have something to say.
New.
Yeah. You know, they're not doing the same thing that everyone else is. Mm-hmm. You have to sort of, you know, I tend to like things. I tend not to mind things where, you know, they're going for it. It's, you know, there are a lot of sort of aspects of this band, both on the record and off, that are kind of just sort of turned up to 11.
Yep.
The lyrics are ridiculously confessional, you know what I mean, at times. But they're super interesting, you know? And to me, this is just a thoroughly modern, I'll say, rock record. You know what I mean? Like, it's not rock in the traditional rockist sense of the word.
Right.
Like, there's a lot of electronic and new wave and pop textures running through this record. But it is a rock record of 2019 to me. You know what I mean?
Yes. And I think while it doesn't have the traditional rockist guitar leads, I do think it has some like wall of sound rock stuff happening that is sort of befitting of, like, you know, almost like a Sigur Rós or Explosions in the Sky at times. It's built differently with electronic sounds and stuff, but then it can also get very sparse. They do a lot of different things. It's all sort of beautifully melodic and just really enjoyable.
Yep. You know, they go to these sort of Bon Iver places at times.
Yeah. I really like this album.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, and it's interesting to me. I was talking to Stephen Hyden about it because he wrote a piece on them. He liked the record a lot. A lot of the critical buzz on this record has been very good. I sort of feel like this may wind up being this year's Lord Melodrama record, you know, that I think that the music press sort of falls in love with. And the American public kind of goes, eh, you know, and I think that's sort of a shame because I do think it's really good and really interesting. I don't know that I hear a lot of hit songs on it though, you know.
I like the second track, I think it is, maybe as much as a single as any.
Yeah, see, and that's already been a single, and it came and went. And that's kind of what I mean.
Say,
yeah,
it's not. No, there's not a great single, but I think that is part of, and maybe it's a little raucous, but I think that's part of probably what both of us enjoy about this record is there might not be a single, but it is just, you can put it on for a spin, and it's an hour long, but you can listen to the whole thing.
Yeah, it's super listenable. You know what I mean? Like, even with these like weird detours and experiments, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Super listenable. And very interesting. And like I said, I'm still kind of getting into what it has to say about you know, online life and being a millennial and trying to deal with the various social pressures and drug addiction and all of these things, you know. It's wordy. It's a wordy record,
yes,
but it's cool, you know. And wordy, I think, in a really unique way. So yeah, I'm in on the 1975.
Me as well.
I'm also guessing you're in on Anderson .Paak.
Way in. I don't think this is quite the masterpiece that Malibu was, because I really do think Malibu was, like, I think we'll look back on that as one of the greats of the decade. But I like this album a lot. It's a little more sprawling in the 2018 tradition than Malibu was, but I think there's a lot of good stuff on it, and I love his style and sound.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as more of an expert on the Paak history than I am, or Paak, I guess it's Paak, right? I heard him say last night he wants to pronounce Paak because he wants to avoid the Tupac comparison.
Yeah,
this is his sort of first record in the Aftermath Dr. Dre family, right?
It might be his first record on Aftermath. I think he was on Stone's Throw, which is one of my favorites. Briefly, he self-released one of his albums. He was on a label called Steel Wool. So this was his first major label release, but he put a lot of work in on Compton, the Dre album, a couple years ago.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So I would say he's been a part of that sort of family for a while.
Yeah. I mean, Dre seems fairly involved here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Both with some writing credits and some, you know, he produces a bunch of these tracks and shows up in raps.
Yep.
There are not a lot of Dre verses out there these days, right? So
no.
But
he's all, you know, he was a writer for Dr. Dre before he was big as a solo performer.
Yeah. I mean, he seems like a super talented dude. You know what was interesting for me?
Plays the drums live.
Yeah, which I liked. I liked super a lot cool. more of, I liked some of the stuff that was a little bit more kind of leaning on his talents. And it was, you know, I'm an old guy, clearly, when I'm complaining about features, the amount of features on rap records. But it does sometimes get to me. There's a significant number of features on this record.
Yes.
From great people. I mean, you got Pusha T and Kendrick and J. Cole and Q-Tip. The Q-Tip song's great. The thing I was going to say was that I feel like this record's almost stronger in the back half than the front half, which I feel like is really
although,
rare.
I think the singles so far have come from the front half, and maybe my favorite songs come from the front half. Like, when it hits the Kendrick, or not the Kendrick, the Dr. Dre song, and then there's the Pusha T feature, the Snoop Dogg feature, J. Cole, Q-Tip. And then if you have the bonus tracks, BJ the Chicago Kid, like there's a really good run there. But
yeah, really good. They should put those on the record.
Yep. Yeah. But Tints is the lead single, and I think it's obvious why.
I didn't love Tints.
No, I like it. It's a lead single,
yeah.
But I do like it. But I also really like Six Summers.
Yeah, I liked Six Summers as well. Is this record going to make him a star? Is he a star now?
I don't know. I don't know that he's really star. I think he's a little too interesting to be a star.
Yeah.
And I hope he remains that way.
I mean, you know, he was on Saturday Night Live and The Daily Show this week.
But that's a particular, The Daily Show is a particular kind of star, right?
Yeah. And even Saturday Live is musical guests on Saturday Live is a particular kind of star too.
Yes, but I mean, look, that the what is it? Get High off Malibu. That was the song of the NBA playoffs, and like, Come Down is the name of the song.
Yeah,
he's pretty big. I mean, Malibu made him pretty big.
Yeah, so, although, you know what Malibu's peak on the U.S. album chart is?
I don't.
79, at least per Wikipedia, which I would have thought have been much higher.
What about Come Down as a single?
Sorry, let me get to Come Down. Come Down, certified gold, no chart appearances.
Wow.
Tints, I guess, has peaked at 22 on the main chart and a little higher on the R&B chart. So there you go.
Yeah, but I mean, that I think that's about right.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's a guy that. I think his best charting work will always be stuff he writes for
other people,
more popular artists.
Yeah.
But I think his best work is the more interesting stuff. As you said, it's the tracks on here where he's leaning on his many talents, which includes singing, rapping, and playing multiple instruments. So, like, and producing. He really is a multi-talent. And I think you might be right if there's a critique here, maybe that he gave out a little too much of the production work to bigger names.
Yeah. I think that he's set up to have a really long, interesting, and probably lucrative career. I don't know how famous he'll ever get, but that's great. Good for him.
Right. Yeah. That might work out just fine for all of us.
Yeah. Yeah. That's as good a position to be in the music business as anybody, I think, right?
Yeah. Frankly, yeah. All it takes is you write a couple of hits for people, and no one even really notices that stuff. So it's not like anyone judges somebody for doing it. But, you know, I mean, Q-Tip has made a lot of his career just sort of quietly producing and writing.
Yep. And I think that, you know, he's also in a good spot from a, you know, he can tour clubs and theaters.
He's coming to the Masonic here in San Francisco, which is like, it's perfect for his solo acts, you know, and then I'm sure he'll have production and writing credits on Kendrick's next album. Like, he and Kendrick are pretty involved. So, he's in a good spot.
It's good living. Good for him. He deserves it.
No doubt.
All right. So should we talk about homework for next week?
It's a big week, baby.
Some obvious stuff. We should start with Top Chef, which we're recording this on Wednesday.
Top Chef
starts. It drops today, but the Top Chef starts tomorrow.
Wait, what do you mean it drops today?
This podcast drops today.
Oh! I thought you meant Top Chef drops today, but then you said it starts tomorrow, which is what I thought all along.
Yeah, Top Chef drops tomorrow. There is a contestant on who is the chef at a restaurant that I frequent.
Really?
On this season, so I'm.
Oh, I can't wait to talk about that in
certainly,
Hot Chef, Episode 1.
I mean, you know, it's not going to be a secret. It's not like there's going to be 7 chefs from Minnesota and you have to figure out which one it is. So,
no, I know. It'll be exciting to hear you once we've seen this chef. How did you find the chefs?
How did I find this? I don't know all the chefs. So I think if you go to the Top Chef webpage, you can, on the Bravo site, I'm pretty sure they're all up there. Mm-hmm, I've just seen some local media reports about this guy being on the show. So,
okay, fair enough.
So I'm excited for that. It's been a while since I had like a super distinct rooting interest. And it's always better when you have that sort of situation. So,
and Kentucky should be interesting.
Kentucky should be interesting. I've spent a fair amount of time. There's a music industry thing. I think we've talked about this in Kentucky every year. So, I've been making a trip to Kentucky and spending a few days there the last few years. So, I'm sort of excited for this setting, and I've done my best to sample their local restaurants when I can. Although it's one of those where they try not to let you leave, so you have to sneak out to do it. So I'm excited for that. And it's just Top Chef and Padma and Tom are back in our lives.
Oh wow. Is the restaurant the Handsome Hog?
It is, yeah.
Okay. So you're right. I'm looking at the chef right now. It's very exciting stuff. I'm looking through the list to try to see if there's a Bay Area chef, but I am not finding one.
Wow, there's almost always a Bay Area chef.
Well, there is one that says, no, he's a private chef somewhere in California. That's probably L.A. Some Kentucky. Oh, here we go. Formerly the executive chef of a place in San Francisco, but no more. Yeah, I don't know if there's a current San Francisco chef or Bay Area. We'll see.
That's wild. All right, so Top Chef is back.
Whew.
What else is back? There's another thing that we're like, oh, my God.
We're doing this every week, right? I assume we're going to talk Top Chef every week.
Yeah. I it's so great that our reality TV watching is mostly aligned now.
Yeah. Yeah. You've really brought me into the fold. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
That's the one I was thinking of. Good job.
Yes. That is also back. You're fully out on Counterpart?
I am fully out on Counterpart, yeah.
Okay. I feel like there is also a film coming out this week that I don't remember. what it is.
All right, so we did all that. Yeah, we did all that, and we didn't find the movie.
I totally failed. There was no movie. I don't know what I was thinking. All the movies are still a couple weeks away. There is some stuff on Netflix, specifically some comedy, that I would like to entreat you to enjoy with me. And that is the new Russell Brand stand-up special that I believe we both saw a preview for. And I've already watched a couple episodes, but I think it's a fun and sort of unique thing. The Bumping Mics, which is Dave Attell and Jeff Ross doing a sort of collaborative roast-ish crowd worky show.
Yeah, the trailer for Bumping Mics sucked me in, so I'll do that. The trailer for Russell Brand, I don't know if it sucked me in, but it made me go,
He's so, an interesting man.
Yeah, I will. I want to check both of those out in lieu of another Discount Tuesday at the theater.
I mean, there's still stuff out in the theater if you want to go for Discount Tuesday, but we can address that off air.
Yeah, we got more Discount Tuesdays to come. I'm good with that. So
okay, all right. Yeah, Discount Tuesday is going to be lit in late December. A lot of good stuff coming.
Yeah, plus I'm traveling this weekend. And
where are you going?
I'm going to Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
Yeah.
How fun!
Trying to get out of the snow for a couple days.
Just to get out of the misery.
I'm going to see some shows while I'm out there. A couple of radio Christmas shows. So I'm going to see like 12 bands over the course of 2 days. So
anyone you want to give us a little tease ahead for?
I don't know if there's anyone that like. I don't know if there's anyone that's they're all noteworthy bands. You know how these radio shows go, but I don't know that any of them where you feel like, oh my god, everyone's dying to hear my thoughts on Florence and the Machine. You know what I mean?
Right. Okay. All right. Well, if anyone turns in a particularly impressive performance, you'll be sure and let us know. And I was going to say, do we want to circle back on anything? Because I have not yet, but I certainly could finish Little Drummer Girl. We could check back in on Escape at Dannemora if we want to watch a couple episodes more, because I know we were sort of juries out on that. We could finish Homecoming or potentially the Romanoffs.
Yeah, all right. I'm keeping up with Escape at Dannemora, so that's an easy one for me.
Okay.
And yeah, maybe we'll finish Homecoming. Let's you and me check in on the beginning of the week. So if you're watching Homecoming, you know, stay with that one because we might talk about it.
Yeah, and I think that's a relatively easy one to finish because they're short and it is interesting. Did you know, by the way, I learned at a dinner with friends that it's based on a podcast.
I did know that, yeah.
All right, well, that'll be one of the things we discuss.
why we don't have a TV show of this podcast yet?
Not yet, but I'm thinking maybe that's an off-air discussion we need to have about doing something interesting enough to be developed into film one day so we can make some cash.
I think we're already doing something interesting enough to be developed into film. Just
you clearly said by a man who is not looking at my bedroom right now.
Point the camera at me and hand me a check.
Believe me, I would if I could.
Okay, say goodbye.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.